Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. And in this episode, we're headed out into the wilderness, once again, to discuss Adam Bruckner's 2018 film, The Ritual, a film that premiered on Netflix, and it's gained an awful lot of buzz in the horror community and elsewhere, I would say, since it debuted a few months back.
Correct.
It's based on the novel by Adam Neville. And, yeah, that's going to be our topic du jour tonight. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Yes, my co-host camper in crime.
Ooh!
Yes, yeah.
Camping to me is a hotel room with 24-hour room service. So just so you know, that's my idea of camping, man.
Actually, mine too. I really like it when I go camping like that. Oh, right. Yeah. It's even better if you can get the office to cover it for you. So. But yeah, we're going to discuss the plot, the tropes, more importantly, what we both think of the film, and maybe why it's gaining such momentum and attention within the horror community, and like I said elsewhere, it seems like a lot of just generally mainstream people who like, you know, movies in general are responding to this as well, outside of the usual horror circles. So, Bill, I know you've read the book, and you've also seen the film. Would you mind giving us a little synopsis before we get into it?
I knew that was coming. A group of old friends decide to go on a journey that they normally take every year. They try to do something new, you know, explore the world a little bit. And interestingly enough, a situation occurs before said journey. They lose a friend, and so this is post-friend. And one of the interesting factors is we have one of the characters is feeling a sense of compelling guilt over what transpired in the loss of that friend, and that is the crux of the tale.
Mm-hmm.
Him having to overcome that guilt and survive in a situation that they didn't expect when they do their little sojourn to the Swedish woodlands.
Yeah, and there's definitely an element of like strained relationships between all of the men based on the incident that kicks the film off, basically. Which I don't think it's a spoiler, Bill. One of their friends dies just in this unfortunate wrong place, wrong time. They walk into the middle of a liquor store stick up, and some tweakers kill the guy. So it's definitely it's definitely a good kind of capture because, you know, the film opens up with all the guys in a pub and they're talking to each other. It's like, oh, where should we go on our yearly ritual? And then they part ways, and then two of them go to the liquor store, and then it's like, oh shit. Yeah.
Gotcha. You didn't read the book, did you?
No, I didn't, which is why I was kind of curious to hear what your thoughts, Bill. Does the film stay relatively faithful to the book and the characterizations? Are there?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And there's certain things that the book did that the movie couldn't, and there's certain things that the movie did that the book shouldn't have done, may say. And together, they complement each other extraordinarily well. So I'm happy.
Okay, that's good.
And I think Adam Neville is as well, and I hope he is. He should, because the feedback's been excellent. His book was well received to begin with. That's how I got a hold of it, and so that's really, I'm happy for everybody involved. Actually,
that's good because this is one of those cases where. someone else did write the screenplay, so...
Joe Barton.
Yeah, and you know, that can go, you know, as with any sort of adaptation, it can kind of go either way.
Agreed, and Joe Barton did a kick-ass job, man. I think he did an excellent job, and I think the filmmakers did a fantastic job in bringing some of those intense images to life, and I thought they did an excellent, semi-surreal job of it at times, so I was really happy.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, Bill, a lot of people have been saying the same thing, and I think that's something that's kind of appealing to a lot of people about this one, because, you know, it takes kind of a premise that we've seen before, and it, I don't know, I feel like it's kind of going back to the days when, you know, there was a lot more implication, and it was more about kind of the psychological element. It's kind of like, oh, well, it's more what the characters are going through rather than the big bad, kind of.
Yeah, and they made that balance work really, really well, because the one thing from the book that I got, it was very disturbing to me. What Adam Neville did, and I don't recall of another author doing this, he captured the internal turmoil, the angst, the fear, the self-loathing. I mean, self-loathing in phenomenal manner. In, you know, getting inside the head of his character, of the main character in the story. And it did such a wonderful job that was horrific on its own.
Bill, can I ask you a question? Is the book told from, is the book told from Luke's perspective then?
You know, that's an excellent point, because I knew as soon as you said I have a question, I was like, son of a bitch, I don't have the book on me, and it's in a box somewhere.
No, Bill, I actually have it. I can go get it quick, because you loaned it to me and I never read it.
Oh, shit, you're the guy. You bastard.
let me run and get it quick, and I'll find out.
Run.
I'll be back.
All right, I'll play music or something. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, we have lingerie on the third floor and on the fourth floor toiletries. We hope you enjoy your stay here at Johnny and Billy's House of Retail Horror. How about that, huh? That's real horror right there. Mannequins. Mannequins are going to come alive if you don't leave the store on time. How about that? But anyway, if you haven't read the book, please do. Adam Neville did a masterful job with creating really solid, in-depth characters, and very enjoyable. Enjoyable in the sense of being horrific, not like, oh yeah, this is a great, fun book. It's a strong ride, and I think a lot of people would really find it worthwhile from the emotions that, you know, Adam Neville conjures within the story and how deep he gets into the character. So you there, Johnny?
Yeah, I am here.
Good, because I can fucking ramble on for hours, man. I need
sorry about that. I should have been, well, you know, better prepared,
yeah,
obviously.
You bastard.
You know, Bill, I'm looking through it, and I can't really... It looks like... It almost looks like it's being told in the third person, actually.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yep.
Yeah. So... But I mean, to what you were saying about it capturing, I guess, the...
That internal angst is just, it's really, man, it's going to hit you.
Yeah, and I, you know, maybe we should describe our experience, you know, our first encounters with the film. I mean, I take it you heard about it through the grapevine, Bill, and you already had sort of a vested interest because of the book.
Yeah, I did. I couldn't wait to see what they would do, because there's a certain thing in the book where we go from following these men on their journey, and then there's a change, there's a shift, one that's necessary, but I felt it was a little... it was a little bit drawn out in the book, where, you know, Joe Barton and David Bruckner, the director, got to things for that third act. They kept it more condensed, more concise, and I think that served the story much better. And I just really enjoyed how they did that. But again, you know, there was no way for, you know, Bruckner or Joe Barton, and Joe Barton did a fantastic job. He really did in trying to translate that inner turmoil on screen. But, you know, you only have so much time with a film and you can only go so far. But I think he did the best anyone could do with a script like that. And so I was not disappointed by any means.
Bill, is some of what you're getting at, like something I thought was interesting about the film was how it ostensibly takes Luke's perspective as the primary perspective in the film. So we're kind of hooked into his character, and he's frequently having dreams or nightmares where he's back in that liquor store.
Rafe Spall played that part really, really well, man.
Yeah, and this, you know, like you spoke to the sense of guilt and how he couldn't save his friend, or he felt he was unable to, you know, by his inaction, he doomed his friend to death, kind of.
Yeah. Like most people in this situation that he was in, it's like, okay, am I a coward? You know, and it's like, how do you fucking live with that? And how do you live with other people thinking that, you know, you showed cowardice when it's like, maybe he did the smartest thing possible. You know what I mean?
Well, and the thing in the movie is it's kind of, you know, it's interesting because, you know, in those types of situations, and I feel like I've been party to those types of awkward social situations where there's that elephant in the room and everybody knows what it is and they don't, you know, no one wants to bring it up, you know, and it lends a sort of a contrived atmosphere to things, like relation-wise. So,
yeah, and that's exactly what's happening with these guys, and you know, because they're still going through the stages of grief by the time they do their journey, and you know, you have clear, you know, there's some clear lines drawn where someone's giving, you know, Luke the benefit of the doubt. Someone else is like, you fucker, you know, you let this happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's, we're all going to have that. And, which sucks because, you know, the one thing that we don't have as humans is we can't get into somebody else's head and figure out what they did and why. And it's like, hey, it's okay. Some people can say that and maybe not mean it. And some people maybe can be that empathetic, but, you know, it depends, you know, it's such an emotional response, you know, to the loss of someone, and that's going to carry over. And if someone's like, well, you were there, man, you should have done X, Y, or Z. And it's like, well, what if you were in that situation? Would you be able to do anything at all?
Well, Bill, you know, and I've had these conversations with other people too, which is why I try to be really careful in not assuming, you know, too much about what I do, especially if it's a situation I've never been in before. So I'm like, you know, I'm more like the guy who would be like, you did what you could, or you did what I would have done. You know, it's because I can't. I've had the good fortune never to be in like some sort of fight or flight, life or death situation like that, where it's
for you, man. It's great.
I mean, yeah, knock desk, but
Well, that's it. I mean, and the thing is, you don't know outcomes. I mean, you don't know if, like, okay, if I do A, these 20 things could happen. If I do B, these other 20 things. So it's like, well, what the fuck do you do, you know?
Yeah, it's like, do you maintain your position and self-preserve, or do you do, like, a possible heroic gesture that winds up in two people getting killed instead of one person getting killed?
You know, when I was in the Coast Guard and we were talking about rescuing people in the water, and from what I understand, you know, I remember talking to you know, my dad about it too. He was in the Navy, but he even said the same thing with lifeguards. You know, if somebody's drowning in the water, you know, you go out to save them. And I mean, they could be flailing their arms, they're hysterical, and it's like you could get punched, knocked out, and this and that. So the first thing you do is like you get out to somebody, and if they're freaking out, you dunk their head under the water to get that shock in them. And so they're like, woohoo, you know, and then you could control them. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad said, because he went to save somebody, and the guy punched my dad in the mouth. And, you know, my dad ultimately, you know, I think he, from what I remember, you know, the guy survived and all. But the rule was, if you go out and you try to save somebody and you try a couple things and it's not working, it's better to have one dead than two. You abandon the person and you come back. And that's a hard thing to face. It's like, shit, I couldn't get that guy to calm down, or that woman or kid, whatever. I have to leave him out there. And it's like, even though it's like you did the right thing, how could you live with the guilt of doing the right thing?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, you know? And I think there's so many things that you can't really have clear cut white and black answers to, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like what I was saying about how, well, it's some people, it's easy for them to be like, oh, like, well, if I were in that situation and act like, you know, it's, you know, the hot shot that you're talking to in the bar or something like that, who thinks he knows everything and has experienced nothing. But, you know, Bill, getting back to our first experience with this, I actually live tweeted this with Tracy.
Nice. Scream Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting when you're live tweeting something because you're kind of watching something, but you're also kind of, I don't know if you're watching for comprehension per se. It's a very, the concept to me is very interesting and I like doing it, but it's not, I'm not getting the same thing out of it as I would if I were just watching something by myself and taking notes on it.
Right.
So I actually watched it a second time.
Okay.
To actually get more of my bearings about the film and focus on it a bit more.
I
think your opinion is a little more favorable on this one than mine is, but, but I think we both liked it, to a varying extent. And I wanted to ask you, Bill, what did you think of the, I know we talked about Luke, but we have the other members of the ritual group. We have Hutch, played by Robert James Collier, Phil, played by Arshar Ali.
Yeah.
Dom, played by Sam Troughton, and then we also have Luke, like we mentioned, played by Rach Spall. What did you think about the dynamics between these guys, the performances? Did you feel the characters were cliched? If so, did they transcend cliche? Because we have seen, I have a list of movies that I could, I can rattle off that the ritual reminded me of, so.
Gotcha. I think, I didn't really see, I think what was interesting is, I believe it was Sam Troughton's character.
Dom, yeah.
Yeah, Dom. He was the one who was like, you know, he was like a little like frumpy and not necessarily in the best of shape and all this and that. Am I correct?
He was the Ned Beatty character.
Yes,
I wrote down.
Exactly. Yeah, but unlike, you know, Ned Beatty. You know, Dom was like, you know, he started talking shit after a while. And it's like, oh, fuck you, man. You're the one who's not, you know, physically prepared for this crap. And you're like spewing out like, you know, this rage and shit. And so I like that contrast. He didn't play what you would expect to be like the rollover character. He got, you know, hurt and stuff like that. And he was slowing down the group. But he was all fuck you about it instead of like, you know what I mean? Which I like. And that's how he was in the book, you know, which is great. You know, and you have, Arshar Ali's character, you know, Phil, who's just like, you know, well, he's, I mean, you look at a picture of Arshar Ali and a guy's just, you know, he could stand at a urinal and be the coolest guy in the freaking room, you know? And,
he's handsome as fuck. And he was like probably my favorite character in the movie.
Exactly. I loved him too. And, you know, Robert James Collier, you know, he did, you know, he was such a great job as Hutch. And, you know, and again, you know, it was cool because, you know, both of these gentlemen are really good looking. And, you know, Rafe Spall, you know, he's actually, you know, he's a good looking gentleman too, but he had to look like a little beaten up for this movie because of, you know, the part he was playing, where they had his physical nature reflecting his internal emotional nature, where, you know, he was a little unkempt. But I didn't necessarily see like stocked characters. I saw, you know, four, you know, regular, you know, working guys, you know, with families who were like, okay, we're doing this guy thing, but they weren't like, yeah, man, you're bringing the beer, you know, it wasn't that crap, you know, it's like, you know, which was great, you know, it's like, yeah, man, we're going on a hike, you know, let's do this thing, it's going to be cool, we're going to, you know, take this one off the bucket list and, you know, try and do something, you know, bigger, better, and badder next year. They're adventurers. This isn't like, you know, a couple of guys like, yeah, we're going to pitch tents, man, and we're going to, like, you know, just pound beers and, like, fish and, like, talk shit about women. Like, it was none of that, you know, none of that at all. And that's what I really – that was loved. It was so refreshing, you know.
I guess, you know, you did bring up a good point there, Bill. I felt like some of the scenarios and some of the plot developments were kind of kept in step with some movies I've seen before, especially the moment, like, near the – kind of close to the midpoint where Dom kind of blows up at Luke about, you know, what happened. And there's kind of that requisite kind of, you know, fighting and
– I can't argue that, yes.
And Hutch is kind of ostensibly – you know, he's ostensibly kind of the leader character who's trying to keep everyone, you know, keep everyone calm, keep everyone – you know, agreeable to each other. Like, when everything starts to break down, he's kind of the peacemaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got you. But I, you know, I was thinking, and I don't think that bothered me, because at some point that had to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not just saying it to, like, you know, save the story or any crap like that. But to me, it was just, like, logical. You know, they're still dealing with this fallout from the loss, you know, going through those stages of grief. So, you know, of course someone's going to be in the anger stage. Someone's going to say, you know, like, well, dude, what the fuck? You were there. You know, like, you know, and I'm like thinking, well, how wouldn't that happen? You know what I mean?
Well, and I think you add on to, that's a good point, Bill, because you add on to the fact that Dom is injured and he's already not in the best of moods and he's already feeling a certain way about things, and the fact that they're getting deeper into the woods and it feels like they're getting lost, maybe, you know, that's all, everything's compounding onto, like, an eventual, you know, emotional outburst from someone, kind of.
Oh, yeah, and I could see, God, man, if we go in the woods and we're lost for, like, for 3 hours, I could see somebody go, what the fuck, man? You know, it's like, automatically, they go, all right, Hudson, just chill out. We're not going to buy it on this rock. You know what I mean?
You know, like, this is some real pretty shit, man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not a bug hunt. We're in it for real. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, I've seen people like that, like, you know, walking down a street in a city looking for a bar. There ain't no bar here, man. What are we going to do? It's like, dude, shut up. The fuck, man? There's always that guy or that girl, you know, who's going to do that. So,
yeah.
But what did you think? I mean, I just thought it was just refreshing that they weren't all about, like, you know, brews and then the hose and all of this crap, you know, and just, like, you know, shooting shit. You know, they were family oriented guys for the most part. They were professional. You know, they weren't, you know, doing 9-to-5 stuff. They were salaried guys but they, you know, they weren't pulling off this, let's go get wasted. And to a large degree, it was the, friggin', oh my God, Ned Beatty's movie,
Deliverance.
Oh my gosh. And it was for them, to a large degree.
Yeah.
You know, but it's definitely not like Deliverance.
No.
Although you could say this is backwoods and we get into some real, you know, funky, you know, animist pagan based, you know, regional, you know, religious based elements and such. But I mm-hmm. think they did it in a really cool way that was still disconcerting.
Well, Bill, what you said, you know, helped, I guess, bring a little bit of perspective to my interpretation of it. Because, you know what, you are right. All the guys are invested in this trip, this vacation, basically, this ritual. And, you know what, it is very much there. Everybody is on the same page. They're, you know, they all, you know, it's not like, let's go out into the woods, let's upset nature, let's create some hateful characters you can't wait to see die, because we've seen that too much already.
Exactly.
So I'll, you know what, Bill, I'll give it a little more credit for that, because...
Well, how come you weren't? What did you see or feel that, you know, made you think otherwise?
Well, you know, I think I had trouble looking past the characters as sort of... What did you say, Bill?
As red shirts?
Well, I wasn't thinking of them as red shirts, but I was just like, as far as each character was concerned, none of them really, like, took that extra step and leapt out at me, kind of, as being exceptional, like, as far, like, from a writing perspective, I guess.
Well, that's, you know, that's what I really enjoyed about the book, because it was so focused on Luke and his inner turmoil, and the rest of these guys were just, like, your group of friends. You're going to have a group of friends that have major similarities,
yeah.
You know, because you're drawn to that, you know, that special something within each of them. And, you know, they're not going to have these extremes. So I thought that was really realistic. And that's what originally sold me on the story to begin with, because I was like, okay, this is logical. This is true to life. So to me, it had more merit and more weight. But that's just me, you know, that's just the way I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The performances are exceptional.
Damn straight. Yeah,
you know, and obviously the production values. I don't know how much the budget was on this, but it feels like a $10-15 million movie to me. You know, because it's very polished looking. You know, it has the look of something that's, you know, they were given a budget to do, not just some, you know, not just to shit out some crappy monster movie, basically. And I think that really comes through, though sometimes I think that might work a little against the movie. I thought the characters and their interactions were good enough to keep me invested in the film. I definitely wasn't bored watching it. And maybe... Another film this reminded me of, Bill, in kind of a different way, and it's going to lead into another question, is The Descent, the Neil Marshall film.
Yeah, damn. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was wondering your feelings, Bill. Did you feel that... I feel like there's a lot... How do I phrase this?
I don't know.
Well, there seems to be a lot of push in mainstream films, especially of, like, being as inclusive as possible, as, you know, representing as many different, you know, types of peoples, you know, ethnicities, creeds, sexual orientations, and all that stuff, yep, in a film as possible to, you know, make it quote-unquote diverse.
Right.
Did you feel that, I don't know, it's like, I think about how The Ritual is very much a boys' club.
Oh, it is. And it's definitely a male-centric film.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, how would the dynamic have been if they had a woman as part of their group? And then I'm like, well, maybe that's why we have The Descent, because that was all women as opposed to all men. So,
and a lot of similarities, too, and a lot of, you know, the same infighting and...
Right.
Yeah, The Descent was a fantastic film. I mean, I really enjoyed that one very much.
And the lead character in The Descent has a similar journey kind of as Luke's character in The Ritual.
Right. You know, they're maybe not even necessarily looking for redemption, but they're like trying to find, pretty much trying to save themselves from within, because I think that's one of the wonderful things about that we see and feel in the film, and we feel and read in the book, is this person trying to come to terms with their action or lack of action and just accepting it for what it was, and not continually beating themselves up, because that's all Luke is doing. I don't think Dom gets it, that, you know, Luke is just, you don't have to tell Luke, you know, oh, you fucked up, you did this, that. You don't need to say a word, man, because he's already dug a hole for himself so deep. You know, it's just like, you know?
yeah, he's already there. You know, totally. Everything that Dom's loading onto is just like, that's just more gas to the fire. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I could, you know, push somebody to like, you know, taking themselves out or whatever. And that, so that's why, even though I didn't necessarily maybe buy that, Hutch was like, Hey, Luke, you know, no problem. You know, I think, you know, Hutch was probably like, yeah, I agree with a lot of what Dom says, but I think he had enough logic in him to realize that, well, you know, throwing fire on those flames isn't really going to be doing much at all. So.
Well, and something I really did like, Bill, was how the I thought it was interesting because there were some subtle changes in Luke's character and even some of the other characters as well. Like between he and Dom, the dynamic changes as the film goes on, and I kind of liked how subtle that was, and that kind of that added a little bit to it for me because I'm like, oh well, it's not just. It's these characters aren't just straight lines. They do kind of zig and zag throughout the film up until they get to the end. So
yeah, definitely. And you know, we haven't talked about it, and not that I want to get a pull away from the characters, but to help tell help tell this great story, we had the music of Ben Lovett, which was perfect. Andrew Shulkin's cinematography was just fantastic, and. Just what you would want from a horror movie. And the film editing by Mark Townes was fantastic, especially when it came to those semi-dream sequences, those semi-lucid moments with Luke and even some of the other characters of the real world, their past, their existence, their actions spilling over into their current situation. I thought they did a really wonderful wonderful work with that without making it Lynchian, you know, which I thought was wonderful and, very created a very engaging environment, very, it was, pleasing on many levels. So.
Yeah. I think there's a appropriately a jarring quality about those dream sequences, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when you first, you know, when it first happens, you're like, well, what the hell's going on? And it's kind of cool what they do with the set design, what they do with the lighting, and how Luke is, like, walking in his bare feet on the ground of the forest, but you have the liquor store with its shelves and walls and everything, and I thought that was kind of surreal, so.
It was really cool. I thought that it was just did an excellent job.
To that end, Bill, from what you recall of the book, did the book go into a bit more as far as those dream sequences were concerned, or those like flashes Luke was having back to those events, or was it kind of hinging as the film hinges, just kind of like he keeps going back to that store? Does it get more involved than that in the book, or is that pretty much how it is?
That's an excellent question that I cannot answer because it's been so long since I've read the book.
Okay.
But what I can say is I just had this feeling in my gut was twisted, of Luke just browbeating himself down in silence, and just like, it was almost like as he was walking, he was just like internally just stabbing himself over and over and over again, just beating himself up to no end, and that, you know, really permeated the book, and it just. And the book weighed really heavy because of it, and and that's what I liked about it. To me, Neville captured it so damn well that it gave me pause. It really did. It was horrific the way he was capturing this internal despair, and it shook me. It really did.
And also, you know, I'll say this about Rafe Spall. I've seen him in a couple of things, and I do think he has a pretty good range. You know, I saw him in this, he was in this really wonderful romantic comedy called What If with Daniel Radcliffe, where he's playing comedy really well.
Yes.
And, you know, he was also one of the doomed crew members in Prometheus, and though neither one of us liked that movie, you know, He's showing a different side of, you know, a different kind of performance in that. And here he's definitely showing a different, you know, aspect of his range. I think part of the reason they probably cast him was because for about the first half of the movie, he has this look like a beaten puppy on his face. He just looks so pitiable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And he sort of mirrored that. He actually had a foundation to work from. He played the character Potter in the White Christmas episode of Black Mirror in 2014.
Oh, okay.
And, man, he just, like, you know, and that's definitely there. And he was also in Life of Pi, but also in Hot Fuzz, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, so he's been in a lot of really many different things. He definitely has a range. And I thought he really brought it with this character. I thought I felt him. You know, and of course he was in Shaun of the Dead, you know, as Noel. So.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I gotcha.
Well, Bill, so we kind of talked about the characters, and what do you think about the, how much do we want to talk about what they you kind of alluded to what they encounter near the end of the film, but as far as like what the storyline shifts to, but how do you feel about the way David Bruckner kind of guides the whole enterprise? Like I thought it was kind of interesting how, and I actually paused the movie while I was watching it to see how far along it was, but there's something that happens around the 40-minute mark, and it's only a brief flash of something you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit like the Jaws moment, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I liked it. I thought it was in the book, it just seemed like it sort of became like a different book to a degree.
Okay.
Because of where they ended up going, because they were no longer on this journey, they were stuck in a particular part of it,
mm-hmm.
and that changed the whole dynamic of the the traveling storyteller thing for me. But I thought Bruckner and thanks to Joe Barton again, captured it really really well. And they kept it to a minimum. Which I think they, in the book, we spend more time at that end period, and it was too much of a shift for me with the book, and it's not that I didn't like the book at all, I did very much so, but I just wish you didn't go there in that way, and I think Bruckner and Barton did a great job in making it work on film, like. I read even if you read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, it's not a horror movie, but I read the book and I really enjoyed it. But there were certain parts of it that were like, oh, and it's like long winded and blah blah blah. The movie, the fat is cut and it's concise, and the movie, ultimately I thought edged out the book.
Now, are you talking about the Swedish or the American version, Bill?
I haven't seen the American version. And that's funny because, we have the Swedish connection because that's where the guys are going here. Even though it was filmed in Romania, it was supposed to be the Swedish forest. And the thing is, as their trek starts, they go deeper into the dark forest of these, this area in Sweden. And, they're going into deliverance territory to a degree. And this isn't – I don't want people to think that it's like – Swedish bumpkins or something like that. And it's something a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. So you feel that the, if I'm listening correctly, you feel like the book kind of spent too much time with where they wind up in the end. Did it kind of demystify what was going on at the end? Because the film...
That's a perfect word, man. Yeah, it demystified too much. And I remember the one character, if they used them in the movie or not, I don't know. But it was great to see that it was a decreased element in the actual movie. I really loved what they did with the film as opposed to what transpired in the book at that late stage.
So as opposed to the movie, which kind of keeps things there's less explanation. The book explained away too much, maybe.
No, it didn't explain away too much. I didn't like the characters that were explaining to Luke, like, hey, here's where we're at, here's what's going on. I'm like, and the movie didn't have that at all. It was, I thought the movie did it perfectly, really made it rock. And,
okay.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, but like I said, because obviously it's a horror movie, not everybody's going to make it out of the movie. Right. So I'm not going to say who's not going to make it out, but something that I liked was how Luke's, like I said earlier, Luke goes from this kind of pathetic, guilt-ridden character to he actually starts to show a lot of leadership when his friends are losing it near the end of the film. And I was kind of impressed by that. He becomes sort of the, you know, like, grip your shoulders, look you in the eyes, and say in a calm voice, this is what we're going to do, you know,
right, exactly.
and we're going to do it. You know, he's not, you know, he realizes he has to step up, but it's not like in a huge, big deal kind of way. It's like the film is very, just like, it lets the characters kind of, it's just these little actorly kind of things that come out in the dialogue and in the body language.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, he goes from this character in emotional turmoil, and it is a character study. And in the end, you know, it's like he's in a situation where it's like whoosh, his head gets, you know, put back together real quick, and logic rules. You know, logic wins the day for him, and it's great because some of the other characters who have been logical aren't. It's like,
yeah.
And it's great. And, you know, it comes down to that. We have to save ourselves, be your own savior, this and that. And, you know, his character embraces that. And we get to see, after him beating himself up time and time and time again, where it's like, okay, he really doesn't want to die. He really doesn't want to fall apart. He really, you know, he's really not weak. You know, he has it. He has it. And now he's going to, this is his moment of, could be his moment of redemption.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's not presented like with the big majestic music and the swelling strings and all that crap that you would see like Yeah, Spielberg didn't direct this, thankfully. So
absolutely, and that's why I liked about Neville's book and you know what Bruckner did with it as well as Joe Barton. They made sure that these, you know, characters were like really relatable, very real. You know, I thought so. You know, they weren't extremes in ways of action or anything like that. You know, it's like, yeah, I could see this happening, you know, and I'm behind this, man. And I hope this character makes it or whatnot, you know, and I hope they get to do X, Y, and Z and make it out or whatever. Because, I mean, it's called The Ritual. So we know there's some sort of ritual coming. So I'm not giving anything away. And it's like, you know, are you going to take part in a ritual or not? Or, you know, save yourself from it? Or what are you going to do? And I thought they did that stuff really well in the film. That was great.
Yeah, and I guess the creature at the center of the movie.
Yeah.
What did you think of how it was rendered? We don't have to really go into detail about it, but how it fit into the story overall. Did you feel that was it was like a complimentary thing to the guilt Luke was feeling, like that forced him to rise up, kind of?
Yeah, I thought so. It worked for me. In fact, the image that I had in my head of the creature from Neville's book, I thought they came. They had a better idea of it when they created it for the film. I was like, that's rocking a little bit more than what I thought in my head. So I was feeling that. I liked it, and I think it fits perfectly into what a lot of Asian cinema has been doing for a long time. Is this is our culture? These are our beliefs. This is part of our past. You know, from our people, from our ancestors. And we saw that a lot, and this is why I think Irish cinema is so successful when it comes to horror, is they're like, Well, we're not going to regurgitate the same story. We have our own freaking stories. We have our own myths. We have this, that, and the other thing, Gaelic, and there's Celtic and all this other stuff. And we're going to incorporate that stuff and present it to the world. And we're going to rock, their world with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what, Neville and company did with this. You know, it's like, oh yeah, you want to get back to some old root stuff? You don't know Swedish history or their back culture? Well, we're going to give it to you right now to a small degree, and it's going to mess with your head. And I love that.
Yeah, and something I thought was interesting, Bill, I know you were talking about the description in the book of the creature and how you thought the filmmakers did it a little better.
My perception of the words. I had an image of the creature in my head.
Okay.
And I think that, maybe they read that a little bit more clearly instead of me.
So in other words, they got into your head, Bill, and they pulled the creature out.
Oh my God. No, Johnny, not again. Johnny. Don't leave me there, man.
Bill keeps having nightmares where he's putting on his headphones and podcasting.
I don't want to bite on this rock, man.
Could have saved the show. I guess was there a bit more detail as far as I guess the origins and the roots of the creature in the book as well? I know you were talking about the there was a character near the end who was just kind of rattling off exposition about too much, I guess.
Yeah, it was, and I know what it is too, and I don't want to ruin the book for people, but and I know why Adam Neville did it, and it makes perfect sense, but I'm glad they steered away from that in the movie. I'm a visual guy, and I didn't realize how much of a visual learner I was, because I always wondered how come I could read all these books, and when I'm done with a book, it's like I might remember some things, but I can't even quote it. I mean, when there's people, oh, I'm going to quote, this monologue from this Shakespearean play. I'm like, what the fuck, man? I can't even quote my own shit, and I wrote it. maybe that's a good thing, but, so when I read the book, certain things stood out for me, of course. But it's more about feeling and emotion rather than description. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, I was like, oh, they're really capturing it now in ways that I either hadn't thought of or, whatnot. And I don't know if that's any answer, but.
Well, I really want to say something, but it treads into like the last 5 minutes of the film.
If you think it's worthy, then we could give a spoiler alert. We've been doing pretty damn well without spoiling anything.
Well,
we're at almost the 50-minute mark, man, so.
Are you saying I should just leave it alone?
Well, it's up to you. No, I mean, if you want to do a spoiler now, that's fine.
Okay. Well, for those of you who have made it this far and haven't yet seen The Ritual, check it out. Then resume this podcast once you've watched it.
Damn straight.
Excellent. Something that really that struck me as kind of profound, Bill, was Luke's encounter with the creature at the end of the film. And I was wondering, what did you take out of that, Bill? Maybe the book goes into more detail about it, but when the creature is this very interesting assemblage of disparate parts, I'd say.
Yeah.
And there's this point where it lifts up a person, and it's kind of like the hollow of a tree with two eyes looking out at you from the darkness.
Yeah.
And so, what did you think of that? Is that like the beast kind of peering into the man's soul, kind of? Or mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I thought it was great, because I think, he reached a point where it's like, I don't want any of this.
Yeah.
And I got that from the book as well. The thing I just remember from the book leading up to it, and this is the stuff I hadn't talked about, but since we're in the spoiler zone, I think, the kids were they were pretty much like younger people. And it was like, who the one kid was like conversing with them all the time about yeah, we're going to sacrifice you, man. And it was like, he was like some sort of black metal kid, making this like real and, not making it real, but it's like, I just didn't like the whole black metal kid thing about it, and just like,
Because it seemed a bit trite and corny cliche.
Trite, corny cliche, and it's like, oh man, you know, I know people are into black metal and they're not like that stupid kid, you know, and so I loved what they did at the end, you know, with the villagers and how they had it, and I thought it was more more palpable for me, and I loved how he was like, no, no more, man. I'm not gonna take this shit, man. I don't care who your god, local regional god is. Fuck you, man. And I'm like, yeah, go Luke, man, go.
Well, you know, Bill, and something else I thought was interesting was how, I mean, we're only shown this small cadre of people living in this cabin, basically, who are worshiping this god or descendant of a god. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think what I liked about that ending was what it says about legends and myth and how, well, these guys just wandered into this forest and they had no idea, they weren't expecting to run afoul of anything, you know. They just thought they were going to have to deal with the elements, and you know, from getting to point A to point B. And there's maybe the possibility that there were more people out there, like the people following the creature somewhere else in the forest.
Right.
But that ending where it's kind of definitive that Rachel's Fall sets the place on fire and people are getting killed, and, you know, it ends with him, like, screaming at the beast and essentially having it cower back into the woods. It's like, it's almost like the beast kind of recedes back into legend, you know, if it's inhabiting those woods and there's no one alive to validate its existence, then what does it become? It just becomes another myth, another legend.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, you know, if there is some sort of a god, regional or otherwise, and it's, you know, thwarted in some way, if it's like ignored in some way, then it doesn't exist at all. And that's what he, you know, he's like, and that's what he did. It's like, no, no, you're not going to eat me or crush my head or whatever the hell you're going to do. Like, no, I refuse. You know, it's like the guy, like, oh, okay. Just like, you know, like, you know, I loved it. You know, he stood up to the, you know, and it was like him standing up to, you know, himself, you know, in a way. It was like this god was a reflection of him. He's like, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm not going to keep beating myself up. You know, fuck that.
You know? Yeah, those screams and all his actions in the, you know, the last act are really like him just purging all that guilt he's been feeling the whole film,
Yeah, and a total rebirth. I mean, if you think about it on a therapeutic level, like rebirthing, I mean, that guy just, that's what he did. You know, it's like,
yeah.
So he's brand new, man. So he's a brand new Luke, so don't mess with him.
Yeah, and you know what's cool, Bill? I gotta say this. I like how there's really no epilogue in this film. It's a simple shot of Luke climbing a hill and walking out of frame and then roll credits and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And which I thought was great, and that's how the book pretty much ended. He's like, he's out of there, you know. And
oh, okay. All right.
You know, good for him. And and it's funny because, you know, the name Luke, you know, it's a Greek name. And it's, you know, part of the, you know, gospel to a degree, obviously.
Right.
You know, his name means light giving. And he's not light now in that whole damn movie, but he can be now. He can now become his name, you know? Like,
right.
Can you imagine him at a bar? Oh, yeah, man, you know, like, my life's tough, this and that. Yeah. Yeah, I told a guy, I went up to a god and I said, fuck you. And like, shut up, you piece of shit. What do you know, you spineless bastard? You know what I mean? Like, you would not want to mess with Luke after this.
Yeah, I guarantee you no one would fuck with him, though, if he told him that story.
Yeah, that's crazy Luke over there. Really? He's crazy? Shh. If he hears you, man, he'll just rip your throat out.
Well, Bill, you know, something the second time around, I was getting a little... I got a little weary of all the dream sequence stuff. I thought it became a bit much. And though I did like near the end where he's actually facing down the creature that he's, you know, he's back in the liquor store, but the creature at one point comes around a corner and, like, boots him out of his fantasy. It's sort of like Fight Club, where Edward Norton's going back into his going back into his cave, and Tyler Durden's like, don't deal with it the way those dead people do, kind of.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that little touch there. It's like the creature's like, nah, bitch, you're going to face me, kind of.
And yeah.
By me, I mean all this crap you've been feeling for the last 6 months, you know, all this guilt, all this anger and frustration and fear. That's me.
And all the second guessing yourself as a man. I mean, that's what the whole thing is. You can feel it. It's like, man, am I a man? You know, like my friend died in front of me, and I maybe, and that's the question. I maybe could have done something.
Right.
Maybe not. And that's what I love about it. And, you know, I think it's funny, you know, looking at Luke as a man and as a character and what he goes through. Luke from the gospel, it's, you know, Luke is one of the four gospels in the New Testament. And,
right.
And what does it do? It contains the details of Jesus's birth and early life.
Mm.
And Luke is becoming reborn. And Luke,
yeah.
You know, and I know Adam Neville didn't just, I'm going to name him Luke. He's an intelligent man. He's an intelligent writer. This name did not come across his, you know, his name choice palette by chance, you know. And so I think it says a lot right from the beginning about the name, and it gives a nice thematic, you know, a subtle thematic hint to what's going to transpire. And can Luke live up to it? Can Luke be reborn? And that was it. Luke, could he live up to his name? And, and in the end, you know, thankfully he does. But, I mean, he's still got, you know, can you imagine, like, oh, man, Luke, you made it home. Where's everybody else? They're all dead. And, can you imagine, like, his wife's, what, my husband got killed in the liquor store because you didn't do anything and now they're all dead? Like, but you could see him going back and saying, fuck you, man. I did the best I could. They didn't make it. You go and try and find her body. It's like, I can't imagine what happened afterwards, but he's definitely a different person. He's not going to roll over. I mean, he'll shed his tears for lost buddies and all, but he will not take shit from anybody.
You know, Phil, I think that's a really good point as to why they did not tie the movie or the book up with an epilogue. Like, that's where it would wind up. Yeah. It's like, there's a lot of questions to be accounted for in the real world.
I know, and I love movies like that, because, like, once the credits roll, I'm the one thinking, shit, man, this guy's got to go back home. This isn't going to be good at all.
But, I mean, the thing of it is, though, they could send the police into King's Forest, but they wouldn't find anything, really.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those villagers are going to stick together and all that crap. It's like, it's like friggin', you know, like Wicker Man. Like, if the cops survived, hey, you wouldn't believe. Yeah, whatever. You know, like, no one's gonna. Like, ain't gonna happen. Oh, you couldn't find a little girl on an island? What are you, a loser? Hey, man, it wasn't me. It's Christopher Lee and his kinky hair, man. I couldn't get around him.
Yeah, if Edward Woodward had, like, twin machine guns, he could have blasted his way out of the Wicker Man and just mowed everybody down.
That a lot.
I kick ass for the Lord. but in any case, Phil, I think we're wrapping up our conversation on the ritual here.
Yes, we are.
What would you give the ritual on a scale of on a 5-star scale, Bill?
I still can't put my finger on it at the moment, but I would say it's between a 3.5. I'm 3.5 stars for me.
Okay. Yeah, I would give it a 3. I think it's solid enough. I think people should check it out at least once and see what they think about it. And I think from our conversation, there's some interesting stuff that you brought up, Bill, that I didn't consider. So there's definitely things to talk about with the film. And I think, you know, per the usual, we just kind of scratched the surface with stuff. But yeah, I think definitely a lot of good points you were making that made me consider it a little bit more in depth than I was after I watched it that second time. So,
Oh, thank you. And I recommend for people that they read Adam Neville's book because it is solid. And if you want to get inside the head of a character and, you know, what they're feeling and how they're like living within themselves, like we all really do, he captures it so well. It's it really is frightening. It really is frightening.
Would you recommend people check out the book before they see the movie, though?
I don't know. There's been a lot of studies where, depending on what you see or read first, that's what you're going to like most. And for me, I would say that's pretty accurate 90% of the time. But if you're a reader, definitely hit the book first. If you're like, nah, let me only read the book after a movie, and check out the movie. I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed either way, really.
Okay.
You know, this is one of the few times where it's like the book to movie, it's like everybody did a decent job all the way around. You know, it's not like some things where it's like, man, this movie was great, but the book sucked, which does happen. And, you know, or vice versa. And, you know, people are disappointed. I don't know if anybody who read the book, I don't know of hearing of anybody who was disappointed in the film. So, and that's a great sign.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of rare, too. So, yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty yeah. much. Yeah. So.
Well, Billy, you got people to scream out to tonight.
Yes, I do. These are wonderful souls you could follow on Twitter. Please do. And here I'm again, no beverage in front of me when I do this. So.
Do you want me to say the one, Bill?
No, I put it on here tonight specifically for me to like try and nail it down. So
the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane, Bill.
Oh boy, Johnny. I hope we don't go to a liquor store together and shit goes down, man. I'm just saying that right now.
You're just gonna hang out in that corner and be like, that's all on you, Johnny. Yeah.
I'm looking for Fritos, leave me alone. All right, so here we go. Our first
pork rinds. You got pork rinds, yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I want the spicy kind. Dan Glover number one. Dan Glover one. I blew it already. Well, someone was starting a car. I was like, what's going on? Lilith's Child, Mermaid Series, Gathering of Lovers series. He's a writer, damn it. Go to Amazon.com. He's out of North Central Illinois. Check him out, Dan Glover. Check out his work. The great Mike Vaughn. How can you find him? He's at Strange Cinema 65. He's a film lover and now author. And he loves all things strange. So we love him as well. The great, recently had a birthday, Gore Blimey.
Yeah!
You can find him at I Am Gore Blimey. Podcaster Chili Head, Archer's Addict, Eurovision fan, and lover of weird campy horror movies. He's on Facebook at Trilogy of Terror. He's out of UK, Wales. Love to visit him one day. And check him out at strangeanddeadly.com, /category/ Trilogy of Terror. The awesome Palco Designs.
Yeah.
Greg Palco is a lover, collector, and designer of horror. He's a super genius. And you can contact him at palcodesigns.com. Definitely check out his site. It's amazing, his work, and you won't be disappointed. He's currently doing an album cover for a band. And if you need movie posters, book cover, and he's an award-winning book cover graphic designer. I mean, he's the guy.
Oh, yeah.
The great, the phenomenal, A Fiend on Film. that is the great Dave Kay. And this is the social media page for Dave Kay, A Fiend on Film. Horror, indie, and foreign films, art, graphic design, architecture, photos, etc. He's out of Grayson, Georgia. And definitely check out his WordPress site, The Magnificent World of Dave Kay. D. Carner. And he is a horror filmmaker, writer, and director. He's out of the USC Film School from the 90s. And he's also a contributor to Scream Radio that we were discussing a little bit. Tracy _TR. And he's out of Palm Coast, Florida. Watch for his stuff. He's awesome. Great man. The lovely, the vivacious, real Jilly G. She's an occasional writer. And that's bullshit because she's a prolific writer. And she's forever a lover of life, music, art, animals, photography, writing, reading. She supports the arts, and she's an indie supporter of anything regarding the arts and all things Canadian. And visit her site, please. You will not be disappointed. CrimsonQuintessence.com. It's phenomenal. Earth Under Glass. Do you see what I see? And that's all they say. Go to their Twitter page, Earth Under Glass. The photography that they take is just really wonderful. I love their approach, and I love what they capture, and just enjoy it. And finally, John's Horror Corner. Who's that?
Oh, yeah.
M. FF Horror Corner. And that is a horror lover, a movie critic, film collector, and a podcaster at Blog Talk Radio for movies, films, and flicks.
Good job, Bill.
Thank you. And also go to their website, moviesfilmsandflicks.com, and they are out of Brandon, Florida. Boom!
You know, Bill, I actually just finished listening to their show on The Shape of Water this afternoon we recorded. So, yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, and they just did another one on, they did The Babysitter.
Oh, I gotta listen. Yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
Oh, man.
Bill, John keeps sharing this image of, or it's a gif of Samara Weaving and the kid, like, doing their little dance back to back, and I'm like, oh my god, I cannot stop watching it. So
I know, I want to be that kid, man.
I do too.
Boy, if I had a babysitter like that, holy shit, I would be like, what's happened to Billy? Billy's like freaking out. I can't handle it.
I want I hate Netflix streaming, because it's like you don't know when or if something's going to come out, like on Blu-ray or whatever. I want the physical copy.
Oh, God, yeah. I want that. I want behind the scenes.
Yes, special features, yeah.
She's great. She's also great in Mayhem, if you've seen that. Mayhem's a good movie.
I didn't like it, but, you know.
It has its moments. I know indirectly the gentleman who wrote it. And he's a phenomenal scriptwriter, one of the greatest I've ever seen. So anytime something wasn't working in the movie, I'm like, I know this guy. That's not him.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Some producer really fucked this up. And it has nothing to do with him. In fact, I want to get his name right, and I'm going to bring that to you now. Of course, Steven Yeun's in it from The Walking Dead fame. And this was written by Matias Caruso, who is a phenomenal writer. I mean, it doesn't exist anymore, but it was moviepoet.com, and it was a monthly like contest. No money, no awards like that. And people would vote on, you know, the scripts, and he would win time and time again. And you could spot a script that is a mile away because it was just solid platinum. So whatever, you know, I gave, you know, Mayhem 3 stars, and whatever issues it had, I was like, I did not attribute it to him at all.
Okay, fair enough, man.
So keep your eyes out for Matias Caruso, because I expect us to see more, much more.
Awesome. Well, Billy, where can people find you on the wide, wild world of the internet? Where can Samara Weaving find you?
Oh, God, Samara Weaving, I'm right outside your house. No, I'm kidding. don't worry, the police told me I can't do that anymore, so I'm not. I am at CrashPalaceProductions.com, where you can find links to this show, as well as wonderful articles from Creatively Angel and our own Johnny Numb, Randy Brosco, Paul J. Williams, and a whole host of other souls, including DM Elms. And you could follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace, Instagram at Billy Crash, and also don't forget to check this show out on iTunes and leave us a starred comment. That'd be great. Johnny, what about you, man?
Bill, I just wanted to say I'm really enjoying the series with Angel and her daughter. It's really cool stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love reading them. I love reading them in advance of everybody else.
It's awesome. It's just like it's a really interesting bit of perspective to get on horror movies. And I just wanted to say that. So
awesome.
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my movie reviews over at loudgreenbird.com alongside the great Frisco Kid TX, Bill Meeker, and Dixie Fairy, Kim McDonald. Great people. Oh,
yeah. Awesome souls. Awesome souls. So thanks, Johnny. I hope in the future we get the chance to go into the woods. If we're going to go deep, man, just got to be locked and loaded, man. Ready for any crazy shit.
Bill, my meniscus is fucked, man. Come on, what do you want me to do?
Oh, man.
This hiking trip can lick my bridge.
Oh, my gosh. On that note.
So long.
Yes, sir. I gotta hold on. Where am I? Where's the button?
Push the button, Bill.
Push the button. Clip it. Okay, here we go. Have a good night, Johnny.
See you, Bill.
Bye.